Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is John Murphy. Good afternoon, I guess, John. How's it going, yeah, man?
That's right. How are you?
Good I'm to hear your voice. Very well, man. Looking forward to this one, man. It's been a few months in the making, shall we say. finally here, though. John, before we get into the thick of it, maybe a brief insight around who you are, what you do, and we'll go from there, man.
Sure. I'm John Murphy. I was born and raised in Boston, Massachusetts. As I told you off camera, a mother who immigrated from Glasgow, Scotland back in 62 and met my dad, who was a Yank, and they got married. And so I grew up in Boston, and I'm proud to say I got my my dual citizenship as a British citizen back in 2010. So just more of a sign of respect for my mother coming over here on her own, immigrating to America to find a better life for herself, which she did. And grew up in Boston, played in college, and got heavily involved in coaching, and was at the university level for probably about 20 some odd years, coached in MLS for 10 years with 3 different MLS clubs, New England Revolution, Columbus Crew, and Colorado Rapids. I'm currently a coach educator for US soccer, and I've done my UEFA Pro badge in Scotland. I did a certificate in applied management with the LMA down in Coventry. Actually did my goalkeeper badges at Lillishall with the FA. So I feel like I'm well-versed in British football, and very fortunate to all the great connections and friendships that I've made over the year. And now as a gift coach educator, I'm trying to give that back to others. So it's been a long career. And while this is going on, I'm in a dissertation phase of a doctorate. So I'm pretty busy.
Amazing. There's a lot there, John, that you've touched on. I guess, you know, my first question is really, why coaching? What hooked you into coaching? What was it about coaching? And I guess, you know, you've mentioned that you've had so many different experiences. I'm really curious to understand the journey a little bit more and how you've transitioned from being a coach to now a coach educator, and how you're finding that.
Yeah, I always think the transition from being a player to a coach is easier when you're not a very good player. So I was a modest player. I certainly was in the game long enough to have a feel for it, which I always feel is important. But I always have a bit of sentiment for top players that try and go into coaching and management. It must be very, very difficult because the spotlight's on them. And you see the Mourinhos and the Wengers and the ones with the modest playing careers that have built up their coaching resume over time. So I think that's what I've done at a lower level. My mother was a teacher. My sister was a teacher. My wife's a teacher. So I grew up in that kind of a mindset, trying to give back to other people and trying to help people. And passionate about the game. I think maybe sometimes it's hard for people to understand from different countries, but there's a lot of people in America that are very passionate about football, and they're not necessarily expats. They're Americans like me and love the game. And I'm fortunate to be able to be connected with it for so long and to help so many people. And unfortunately, the good thing about having a long resume is it means I've been in the game a long time. So it's been a great journey thus far.
Definitely awesome. And I guess, you know, just in terms of that, it's a question I often ask coaches a lot in terms of that. What does coaching look like to you? What does it mean to you? Like, you know, I guess there's so many different roles that a coach can play. Yeah. If you strip it right back, what's at the heart of that for you?
Yeah, I think it, context is so important when it comes into coaching. So when I was a young coach, I think it was just to be connected with the game. And, I don't necessarily feel like it's a young person's job, but I think when you're younger, the players want to connect with you emotionally. And I think that's the door that you can walk through as a young coach. And if you have that enthusiasm for the game and enthusiasm for other people and you're unselfish, I've always found people that kind of fell out of coaching, not everybody, but the ones that fell out of it early, maybe it wasn't for them because you're giving up so much of yourself and so much of your time. But then you hit that nice spot where you're a little bit older, but still have the energy and you have the knowledge. And you know, that's probably when you're at the heart of your career as a coach. And I certainly feel like I have a lot more left in the gas tank, but I think I'm entering a new phase of my career now. That of a coach educator, somebody who's giving back to the game in that way. I can certainly work with young people and young players, which I do from time to time. Coaching ultimately means helping people and guiding them and trying to bring out the best in them. I also think there's a social component to it as well, social inclusion. Not everybody's going to be a top player or professional, but providing opportunities for young people to be together. I think it's more important than ever for young people to understand about conflict resolution and talking to people from different backgrounds and, you know, trying to find some common ground. You know, we certainly need it nowadays more than ever. That's where sport's so important. And that's where football is a fantastic sport for all of us. It's interpreted worldwide. Everybody plays it, men and women, youth and adults. And, I'm proud of our sport. I know you are as well. And to be able to connect with people as a teacher and a coach and now a coach educator has meant a lot to me. But context is important. I think where you are in your career will determine how coaching is interpreted, but ultimately it's about trying to make a situation better than you found it. How's that?
I think it's a great way to put it. And I think it is just literally just that, isn't it? Leaving the situation better than you found it. And you know, whether that's because of what we value or because of what the individuals themselves value, and just allowing them to feel enriched and flourished in what we've been able to offer them and give them value to. So I guess, you know, just linking that in, you know, talking about coach education, similar to yourself, working as a coach educator or coach developer, and I think I'm fascinated personally by the semantics that go with it in terms of the titles and the interchanges of, you know, what that looks like. Where, you know, what is the difference between a coach educator, a coach developer, an instructor, and all the other rest of it? And I'm just really trying to understand a little bit more about your approach to that, and I guess, you know, doing a bit of cross Atlantic comparisons, really, in terms of how does the coach education system out there work? What does that look like for you guys, and what are some things that you think, you know, you guys may be doing really well, and maybe some areas for development potentially?
I think first of all, you're gonna have evaluations of terminology are going to be different in different countries. And I think we forget sometimes the Brits and the Americans because we share a language. Every once in a while, you'll see words or phrases that don't make a lot of sense. And I'm very comfortable going back and forth between soccer and football as a term. I'm very comfortable using either one. I think there's always going to be a little bit of an issue with that. I'm finding that with my doctoral work, you look and you see terminology is sometimes different, sometimes outdated. But, you know, at the end of the day, a coach educator for me, is someone who helps someone in a formalized coach education program. Now, someone who mentors, and I like to think I mentor quite a few people. I don't do it necessarily formally, but I get a lot of phone calls and emails and requests, and that's where I can tell I'm getting old now. I got a lot of people asking for my advice on things. But a coach educator, specifically with U.S. Soccer, you know, we work within the curriculum that's set by the Federation. And I have to say, you know, Americans, those of us that have been in the game a long time, we're hard on ourselves. We're hard on ourselves because we see countries like England, you know, Scotland, so thrilled to watch them qualify last week against Denmark, and just the, you know, the scenes, the way the people reacted, it fills you with a lot of excitement. But you're a little jealous because we just don't have that over here. So we're tough on ourselves, but I think there's things that we do very, very well over here. I think our sports science is quite good. I think our coach pedagogy, breaking down coaches' roles and learning outcomes and how to organize space and place, who's in front of you, what kind of sessions you're going to run based on the level that you're working with. I think those are things that we do quite well. Sports psychology, we do quite well. And I think you and I have talked about it before. I think where there's a little bit of a gap, we just don't have the football culture in this country. And it doesn't mean we don't have one. We're just not where a lot of these other countries are. As an example, I was talking with a colleague last week, it's amazing to watch the South American women's national teams really grow and develop the way that they have. And these programs get nothing. They get very little from their federations. I'd even say socially, it's probably a bit misogynistic on how they look at it. But these women are so committed and they give so much that they've actually inspired their countries, and they're changing the way society looks at women's sports, but by the way they represent their country. I'm thinking particularly Colombia, where you know that Brazil's pretty good, and Argentina's women have grown, but Colombian women's football has really come a long way in a short amount of time, and you see the pride that they have playing for their country, and they're changing people's mentalities over there, not only about women's football, but maybe, you know, women in society. And I think that's where sport can be very, very powerful. So getting back to the coach education piece here in America, we do a lot of things quite well. And perhaps where there's a little bit of a gap after these coaches have gotten their certifications and their licenses and they go back to their communities, how is that new information, that learned information interpreted within the context of where they are working? And I think that is probably where we have a bit of a weakness. Whereas, like I said, in Colombia, where they don't have the resources and the money and the facilities, but you can see the culture is interpreting the value of sport that much higher. So that's where I see some issues for us as a country.
And just to build on, obviously, you know, you guys have invested a lot recently. You've got the new base site in Atlanta. Now, how's that shaped things or influenced the excitement in the sport, both from a coaching lens and even just coach education as well?
Yeah, so I was up in Atlanta last weekend, and I wanted to do a tour, but it's still a hard hat site, so they really are not ready. So I met some colleagues at a Hilton that was nearby, and they were having a coach's workshop there, and unfortunately, even the fields aren't ready. There was a women's under 17 and under 15 camp going on, and they had to jump in vans and drive to local fields. So, you know, they're trying to put the imprint in the of that area of Atlanta down, but they're really not ready. And it looks like all systems go for the World Cup. It'll be functional for not only, you know, the U.S. team to use as a base during the World Cup, but perhaps other countries as well. So it looks to be quite impressive. It's a great commitment from Arthur Blank, who's the owner of the Atlanta United soccer franchise. And he's put quite a great deal of money down to get this facility going. So it's going to be great for all of us. It's going to be great for coach education. We're currently based in Kansas City, which is in the middle of the country, which has its strengths and advantages. But to have everything under one roof, the Federation offices, the national teams from youth all the way up to full teams and coach education under one roof. You can see the value in that. So I think it's exciting. You're seeing it happen in England. And obviously France has had it for quite some time. Italy's had it for quite some time. And, you know, for us to develop a facility that's similar to St. George's Park, I think is important for us.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I guess, you know, you talked there about St. George's Park. I remember when St. George's Park first came, and I think there was so much excitement and so much eagerness for all the coaches involved to kind of not just get around it, but just, you know, the influence it had in terms of, right, we're entering a change, if you like, and a new stage of the journey within coaching. And I think one of the key things that came with that is that there were so many additional opportunities just to kind of get support from coaches or coach developers. And I guess, you know, linking it back to that, you know, as you know, and similar to yourself, you know, doing my doctorate, really trying to explore like what works in coach education, how do we influence coach learning, how do we develop the coach developer, and like really fascinated by the whole concept of everything linked to all the above, right? So I guess, you know, I'm just interested to kind of learn from your perspective, you know, what's been the most influential factors for you in your own coach learning, and how does that translate into your own coach development practice now?
Yeah, I think that the way it works in the States, and I think it's mirrored in other sports. So you know, we have a sports culture in this country that oversee all of our sports. So I think in regards to coach learning, it's similar to what you see in basketball and American football, which is everyone keeps their information very close to the chest. They don't like to share. They don't like to do visits, but if you're lucky enough to be friendly with influential coaches, then the door is open. So I'm fortunate enough. I've made some great friends over the years and top American coaches and colleagues, and then have so many friends overseas. It would get into name dropping, but I think because the environment is so competitive, say, for example, in England, it's so competitive. And there's so many good people that are outside of football that can't even get in. It sounds contradictory, but it's not. I think you're more apt to share information over in England, because at the end of the day, you still have to, you know, I could give you my plan. You still got to go out and beat me, you know, where in America, we see that as a weakness, where we share information. You know, you might have something on me and you might be able to use that against me in a competitive setting. And what I like about England, Scotland, Italy, wherever, I mean, it's so competitive. All that is just stripped bare. And I think you see people share information more. So I've been so lucky to have top people all throughout the UK and Europe, Central and South America, sit down and share all their knowledge and their thoughts and their mindset. And you don't get that as much over here in the States unless you have a relationship with that person. That's what coach education is good. You know, we do a national convention in January. That's another opportunity where people are a little bit more open-minded about sharing information. But yeah, we're funny about that. I think we're as innovative as we'd like to think that we are. I think there's more to do in regards to mentorship, as we were discussing earlier. You know, the gap between the coach and coach education about having qualified mentors in some kind of a position, whether it comes from the FA or whether it comes from a national sports governing body, but there's some kind of branch to connect all of those things, and there's CDP opportunities, and so it's lifelong learning and growth, and that's where I think we have opportunities to do those things in the future here in the States, but they're not in place right now. That's why I always tend to find myself going to look overseas for best practices, because it seems like there's good you know, there's good foundations for that type of work in between the coach in his or her community, coach education, and then what's going on in between, whether it be mentorship or, mm-hmm. You know, conferences or opportunities to meet formally or informally.
I think it's a great point. And I think you just really, you know, reminds me of some of the experiences I've had. And actually, it's often not the courses, it's often not, you know, the CPDs themselves where that learning comes, but it is the informal conversations. It's part of the reason why I've kind of even started this podcast, really. You know, I'll always say, look, you know, I'm over, you know, 375 plus episodes now, and every single time I engage with another coach, yourself included, is always an opportunity for me to learn. And like, sure. you can't put a price on that, right? That's so right. I guess, you know, it's interesting to hear that there's still that element of secrecy. What's mine is mine, what's yours is yours kind of mentality. And you get that a lot here in coaching as well, in England in particular. But I think where I've certainly, for me, where I've flourished the most and where I've been able to have most impact as a coach developer in that respect is being able to facilitate those environments and bring coaches together to almost what I call coaching conversations. And actually just talk about the coaching aspect. Let's move away from the concept of football for a second. Let's just move into what it looks like to have a coach. And I guess one of the beauties of where we've kind of ended up now, and probably adds to what you were saying a little bit around, you know, the reluctance to share, is that there is so many different ways to do it now, and everyone's trying to, I guess, find the right way and the best way for them. But you're spot on in what you said. Like, at the end of the day, you might have a plan, but you still got to go out and deliver that plan.
That's
you still got to execute on it, and there's so many variables within that you're not even can control. Like, you know, I was speaking to a coach just yesterday, and he came up with a great quote. And I don't want to misquote him, but he basically said, "Look, at the end of the day, you got to go out there with 22 players on the pitch. You can't control 22 players. All you can do is control what the message that you share with the 11 that you're working with.
That's it.
Right? And it's not just the message. It's how you land the messages, when you land the messages, who you land the message to in different moments of the game. But also recognizing when that message needs to be altered and adapted to meet the needs of what's happening in front of you. And
exactly.
And it's looking at the game through the eyes of having almost that yin and yang kind of element, right? Like for every yin, there's going to be a yang. But can you quickly identify, observe, and recognize what those moments are in the game in front of you? And I guess the important part for me, and I guess the bit from a coach education standpoint and development piece, is how well are you effectively able to reflect on what's happening, what's working, why it's working, what's not working, why it's not working. So I guess within that, you know, what are some really useful kind of things that you've gone through in your journey, and what are some key messages that you've picked up from people and recognizing that actually, do you know what, maybe I didn't get this one quite right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's one of the benefits of coach education, because ultimately it's adult education. So you're really working with people that are, you know, professionals. They're in their world, and they might not be in coaching full time, but they're professional people. And don't get me wrong, I'm sure there's plenty of people in England, Scotland, and elsewhere that won't share anything for the reasons that I alluded to. I just feel like you have, like, you meet someone like a Walter Smith, God rest him. He was the manager of Rangers, and I was fortunate enough to have him a couple of times for my coaching badges, you know, back in the late 90s and early 2000s. I mean, what a guy, and just phenomenal mind for the game, but very humble. And I guess that's where I should say that, you know, these top people usually are really top human beings, because they understand, you know, they had a lot of people help them along the way. So so I think when you're talking about, you know, my journey, I've mirrored a lot of top people to be open-minded, to be self-reflective, to be open to hear criticism, to be able to learn, to get better. And I think the top people that I've come into, those are qualities that they had that I've tried to mirror. And again, I don't want to just, I'm not going to drop names, because they're too many to believe, but I've been fortunate to be around some really top people and just listen talking about football and moving salt shakers and pepper shakers at a pub and talking about formations and things like that. Just brilliant. But what always resonates with me is how humble and human they are. So I try and keep that in mind when I work, that we all have personalities and we all have ways of doing things, but being open-minded enough to understand who you're working with at the moment, who's in front of you, whether it's a U12 team or whether it's a professional team, and how your engagement with them will be modified based on a lot of those different characteristics. And that's really where my coaching is. I try and treat everybody with a lot of respect. Like I said, whether they're a professional or whether they're a young person that I happen to be working with, try and show people respect, try and model the behavior that I'm looking for. And you'd be surprised. The professionals want that just as much as anybody else. And everyone thinks that the professional level's cutthroat. I think for that very, and it is, but for that very reason, I think players are looking for coaches and people that are going to look at them from a player centered perspective. How can they, how can this person help me become a better player and improve and get another contract and play longer and those types of things. So it is cutthroat, but what I liked about the pros is very, very clear what the objectives are, and you're not going to have a lot of time to work if you can't show people that you care about them first as an individual and then move out. So that's how I coach. That's how I coach when I'm working in adult education. And, you know, that's really a basic foundation. It sounds simple, but it's difficult to do in application because there's so many different things that happen in a team. And as you said, you got to be able to think on your feet and you got to be able to come up with solutions that's for the benefit of the group and not just you as the coach.
I think it's really important there, right? Because ultimately, what you're talking about there is just connecting with each other as humans, right? Just on a human level, just being able to connect with the individuals, but also a key thing with them that is also meeting them where they're at. Like, you can have all this information that you want to get across, you could have all these ideas, but ultimately, if that connection ain't there, then there's no foundation that's been built that you can kind of lay on top of, right? And I say it a lot, like, there's a difference between what the message that you think the players need and think the players want versus what they actually need and what they do want. And even within themselves, like, sometimes they might want something, but actually it might not be what they need. So how do you get to that collaborative point where you can express, one, what your perceptions are, two, explore what their wants and needs might be, and how do you marry those two things up? And I guess alongside that, it's that element of how do you do that in a way which is relevant and, relevant and engaging for them as individuals? And that, you can only do that once you start to begin and build that connection with them, right? So I guess, talk to me a little bit about your style there. You talked a little bit around it being person-centered and I guess meeting them where they're at in that respect. But, what is it, we come and watch a John Murphy session today. What does that look like? What are some key principles for you? And I'm sure this has changed for you over the years, and I'm sure similar to myself, you look back at your earlier days and you think, what the hell was I doing? But what does that look? What's some of the key principles and fundamentals that you go after when you're actually delivering any type of session?
I'm trying to remember where I heard it, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but this was years ago. This was like either in my late teens or early 20s, and read somewhere that you should always care a little bit more than you're supposed to, and there's obviously a weakness with that, and people can, you wear your emotions on your sleeve. People can see that, they can use it against you. But I think if you're a coach or you're someone involved in the game, you should show an enthusiasm and an enjoyment and a passion, even if that passion, goes over a little bit towards something that's, a little bit more disciplinary of nature, but at least people see that you care. So I think that's important. Another thing that I believed in, and you are right, I think you do adapt over time. In my work as a coach educator now, I'm really delving in a lot deeper into game models. And again, we worked from these premises 20, 30 years ago. We just didn't call them game models, and we didn't have them written down and organized in that manner. But we always worked from a basis. But I always thought that the environment was more important than what was being said at practice. So my training sessions, I wanted them short and sharp. I wanted them high energy. I wanted them moving from one thing to the next quickly. I used to work, and again, I must have picked it up from somebody, but I can't remember. I used to work in, I call them sandwiches. So sandwiches can be within the training session. So, the warm-up is player-centered. The second activity is a little bit more coach-centered. The third activity is player-centered, and that type of thing. And then end with some kind of a game. And I'm telling you, I did that with the pros. And I mean, if you end practice with anything but a game, sometimes I'm wondering what the heck you're doing. And that doesn't include doing some specialty work and crossing and finishing or whatever. But I'm talking about the main part of the session. I mean, there should be some kind of a game involved. And then within those sandwiches, it'd be the same thing if I'm working from a Monday to a Friday, where Monday would be player-centered, Tuesday would be more coach-centered, which would be more tactical phases of play, breaking things down on an 11-a-side setting, Wednesday player-centered, Thursday coach-centered, Friday player-centered.
Just on that, though, John, I think it's quite interesting because you talk about almost having a player centered session versus having a coach centered session. Obviously, that you know, the environment you're referencing might be one that might be full time, so to speak, where you're with players regularly, multiple times a week. You know, just really curious, and a more, especially for some of the listeners maybe listening in now, thinking, how do you arrive at the point where you decide this one should be player centered versus this should be coach centered? And obviously, in the structure of your week where you've got a lot more time with the players. Yeah. You know, what does that look like if the time
is stripped back? And you were talking about terminology earlier, and you know, concept of mesocycles and microcycles. That's more sports science, so maybe you can just put it as blocks. So I mean, if you're a U14 coach, you just work off the fixture list, and that's what I would do. So I have a game every Saturday, and we practice on Tuesday, Thursday, and then I map out. You know, you can, in theory, map out the whole season if you want, just basically, you know, mapped out as some kind of a pattern, where, you know, the Tuesday's a little bit more player centered, they're coming back off the weekend, and Thursday we're focusing a little bit more on game things, and then it goes back into the sandwich that I was talking earlier. Then you can have sandwiches within the practice itself. So something's a little bit more player centered, or something's a little bit more coach centered. The point is you have to find ways to, The players want to come to practice. One of the best compliments I ever received was from a guy that played for me at New England. And when I went to Columbus, one of the guys from Columbus called his buddy at New England and asked him about me. And he says, yeah, you'll love it. Runs great sessions, a lot of fun, excellent, high energy. And the player told me that after a month and a half, he goes, yeah, my friend said that you were going to be great. And I took that as a real compliment. And at the end of the day, you know, you want to have successful performances, and at the pros, it's all about winning. But ultimately, as a coach, that's what I would want. I would want a player to say, yeah, I enjoyed coming to practice. I enjoyed that. I felt like I got better. You know, whether I was focusing on things that I wanted, I guess ultimately it's all player centered. You don't ever want to do anything that's so dry and boring. Like set pieces are a funny one. Set pieces are funny. You can walk through set pieces, and I mean, really bore people to tears. And, you know, you need to balance those things. So you're asking me about my philosophy. I think early on it was, and for a long, long time, it was more about high energy, rotation of the ball, rotation of the pressure. So you're talking about with the ball, without the ball, and then the transition moments between the two. Now that I've been out of coaching full time for a couple of years and doing this work with US soccer, I am looking at the game models. There's logic to that. I get it. You can break it all down. But yeah, to answer your question, just get a calendar and just start marking off when you have a game. How many times do you practice a week? If you only practice twice a week, then you have two sessions a week. And obviously, the less sessions you have per week, the more economical you have to be with your time. Whereas, like you said, full-time football is great. I have Monday through Friday to be able to get in everything I want to get in. And now you have time to be able to, you know, maybe balance things a little bit. But I just think that's it. It's about time. It's about objectives. It's about resources. It's about level of play. I think those are all the contextual factors that a coach needs to look at, and you don't have to be complicated about it. I think that is really what I've learned from top people. They keep it very simple, very simple. I've been in a room with Kevin Keegan and listened to him, and Kenny Dalglish, like top guys, and it's just simple, like really simple stuff. And it comes down to either having the talent or nurturing the talent. So for those of us who coach at U12s, you know, we got to nurture players. We got to bring them along, and it can't just be this kid's a great player, I'm going to work with them. This kid's not good, I got to get rid and bring in new players. That's where the professional game can be a bad example for youth sport. I think we really need to understand the difference between elite tracks of sport and sport for social inclusion and for health and for participation. And there's nothing wrong with that second track. That's a very important track within a community. And it's a very important track for a majority of the young people that we're working with. So again, as a coach, whatever level you're working at, you should have a growth mindset. We're so lucky nowadays, forget about all the coach education opportunities we have. We have YouTube, we have, you know, great podcasts like this one where you can sit and really listen to people. And kind of, if you can pick up one or two things from anything that I'm saying, then that's a good podcast as far as I'm concerned. And I get that when I listen to your podcast all the time, I'm always picking up a couple things and learning, as you said earlier. So that's what it's all about. And if you're a competitive person, you want to apply all these different things. And some of them would work in your environment and some of them may not work in your environment, but it's always nice to hear new ideas.
I think you're spot on. And I think, you know, I talk a lot about, you know, coaches and development of coaches and learning and run. Like every opportunity, every interaction is an opportunity for you to gain an understanding, whether that's something that reaffirms what you already believe and know, or whether that's something which contradicts it and challenges it. But then ultimately you've got these three buckets that you kind of filter out the information into, right? You've got information which is like, that's brilliant, I'm going to take that, I'm going to use that right now. And it doesn't have to be done verbatim or literally in the way that you've understood it or heard it, but actually how do you take that and an element of that concept and apply it in your work. Then you've got the other bit of information, which is, this is really good, it really resonates with me, I really like this, but actually, do you know what, I know this might not work with my players right now, because I know my players well enough. And again, it's that conversation on how well do you know your players, right? And then there's other stuff which completely contradicts that, and you know, and you think to yourself, this ain't for me. I can see it, I can understand it, I get it, but it's just not for me. And that's fine as well. And it's not about, and I think this is the beauty of coaching and coach education in particular, like there's no one right way to do it. And I always say that, you know, within that, not having one right way, that's fine. You need to have a way. And having clarity on what that way is, whether it's whether your players see that it's best suited for them, whether it's the fact that your players look at it and say, actually, this doesn't work for me or does work for me. But even you as a coach, as an individual, right, it's able to get into that situation where you say, okay, here's a way, but here's the way that, here's what I require for this way to exist and work. But then at the same time, if this isn't present, I need to then explore how I might need to adapt that. And I guess that's the beauty of having these conversations, right? Because there's going to be things that resonate. There's going to be things that you think, well, actually, yeah, that's really useful.
That's the value of coach education. So when you go and you do a B license, and whether it's in England or the United States, you know, you have to follow the curriculum. You have to follow what's being taught, and it takes you out of your comfort zone a little bit. And there's a great saying, making the familiar, you know, uncomfortable. But it's a great way of looking at learning, where, you know, we all know the game, we all love the game, but because you go to a formal coach education opportunity where there's a curriculum that needs to be followed, it takes you out of your comfort zone a little bit. And obviously you need to follow the assignments and the objectives to eventually earn your badge. But there's no one, you know, looking behind the bushes after you get you've earned your license to make sure that you're doing everything based on what the Federation said. So it's about taking new information and integrating it into your knowledge. Now, within the coach education program, you really need to regurgitate.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Take what they're giving you and give it back to them. But then can you go back to your club situation and utilize some of this new information? And as you said, some of it's going to apply. Some of it's perfect for right now. Some of it does not make sense for the level that you're working at. And some of it may make sense, you know, over a longer period of time. So I think that self-awareness is so important in a coach, and having that humanness. And I tell this to student coaches all the time when I work with top players, you know, when you see the exercise isn't working, don't scrap the whole thing, but maybe you make the space a little bigger, a little smaller. Sometimes you can add a player or remove a player or just shift it a little bit. And I think the players come away with more respect for you because they see that you've seen that there's an issue and you've tried to address it. And instead of, you know, sticking to your guns and, you know, you think that you're going to look weak by changing, I think seeing what's going on at the time and see if it's working, If it's working, great. Can we build on these principles and start adding sub principles and start making the exercise more complex? Or if it's not working, okay, does it just need a little bit of time? Do you need to get in and make a coaching point? Or is there something structurally wrong with the space, the numbers, the objectives, that type of thing? So anytime there's a learning curve, there's always going to be an awkwardness. And what I'm fond of saying is you do a exercise with a team, and it maybe doesn't go exactly the way you wanted to, go back and do the same exercise 2 weeks later, and everybody looks like they're playing for Real Madrid. It just sometimes you need to take away a little bit of that awkwardness, and especially with young kids, they'll come back and they understand it a little bit better, and then they open up a little bit more. So like you said, there is no set way to do it. However, what coach education does force all of us to do is to be a little bit more structured in our thinking. And it's just like a college degree or professional certification. If you're an electrician or a plumber, it's just something to give you something to work off of. At the end of the day, you got to be able to go out into the field and, you know, apply your knowledge to whatever environment you're in. So that's where I see the value of coach education. But it can only go so far. Ultimately, it's the applied experiences that really develop coaches, in my opinion. That's why I feel mentoring can be something that can take that a little bit further.
100%. I think there's two brilliant things that you touched on there. Like one of the first things is about the power of vulnerability in the coach, you know, being able to say, do you know what, I haven't got this quite right. And I actually talk about it a lot. I think I completely agree with what you said. Like, you can probably earn a lot of respect and a lot of credibility by just sticking your hands up and say, hey, let's stop right here. Yeah. Let's fix this up. This ain't quite working, or whatever that is. Versus you recognize something's not quite right. You don't put anything, you don't do anything with it. And then you might address it in the next session, but you know, the life can be so fast paced that you might even forget that even happened. Then now you're not even addressing it. So like, actually, you got to ask yourself, what's the purpose of the session? What's the purpose of the session is there to develop a place. If you've identified there's a component or a factor in, you know, in place that is going to hinder that, then why would you not address it? Right. It's like, you know, if I've got a car and I've got a flat tire, well, why would I leave it flat? I'm going to pump it up, or I'm going to change the tire or something. Right. I've got to address the need of the context. And I guess, you know, linked to that, you talk there about the place of coach education. I'm really keen to kind of understand how that has shifted and, you know, in the US over the years that you've been involved, because I know we certainly seen massive shifts in England. I've probably seen two or three shifts since I've started getting involved, not just in coaching but in coach education, where it was very heavily technical, tactical. It was very heavy on the coach directed and be directed by the coach educators, and there's a lot more freedom and autonomy now for the coaches to kind of explore what coaching looks like for them and their context and their environment. It's almost, you know, UEFA talk a lot about this reality-based learning component. You know, I'm really interested to kind of see what, you know, where the US is at with that and what your experience has been over the years.
No, you're absolutely right about various iterations of coach education. And the interesting about the history of coach education in the States, it started in the mid 1970s. And I know people that have gone through it. The you know, the guys that I really look up to, the older guys, and you know, it was very German based and very German standard, and it was like that all the way through, you know, the 90s, maybe even to the 2000s, and then it kind of morphed again and changed. But the good thing is now, and you just alluded to it, with UEFA, with reality-based approaches, and I think that's also coming from FIFA, that probably U.S. soccer is more aligned with coach education worldwide than it's ever been. And a lot of the things that Americans are very good at, which is classroom, periodization, video analysis, sports psychology, coach pedagogy, we're very strong in those things. That's taking place worldwide. So when I went and did my, you know, my B license in Scotland in 1996, we were basically, we had a couple classroom sessions, not too much, but basically we were out every day, and for 8 days you had to practice coaching session, every person had a price. So you did practice coaching 8 days. So 8 times you did practice coaching. And there's a huge value to that. And basically, you had half a pitch and you tried to bet in your whatever your point is, balancing your back four or midfield support or whatever. And the same thing would be going on the other half of the field. And then eventually the coach educators would get the two groups together and we'd play 11 aside. And I would get my freeze and you would get your freeze. And whether that's the most effective way to judge whether a person's a coach or not, you got a lot of opportunities to coach in front of peers, in front of professionals. And it was a lot of pressure. And I saw guys with much better player and experience than me, you know, struggle with it a little bit. And no classroom session. And we were done at 5 o'clock and we were in the pub at 5:30. And I think it's changed now. I think in Scotland and in England, it's changed where it's a little bit more like the US where you're going to have your, you know, you're going to have your classroom stuff and it's going to make your day a little bit longer. And you're probably not getting as much of the practice coaching, you know, it's a little bit more condensed. But we have to be careful not to get too far away from, you know, how we assess coaches and their learning. I think practice coaching is very, very important. Getting on the field and showing people what you know still should be an important part of coach education. But I think you're seeing it morph again, and I think it's going to change again post World Cup. And I don't know if that's coming from FIFA, I don't know if that's coming from CONCACAF, or I don't know if that's coming from U.S. Soccer. But there's talks about it being modified and a little bit more into like module type work. And obviously, we have the ability to do hybrid type coaching learning. We have a huge country. I think that's an issue that we have where, you know, it's not easy to get around England, but you can get to a lot of England, you know, within a couple hours, either on a train or a car. In America, we have huge issues with travel. So you know, this module type learning, I don't know if that's going to come from the Federation or if that's coming from CONCACAF or that's coming from FIFA. But you are right. The constantly, you know, methodology and curriculum are constantly being evaluated, as they should, because, you know, our world is changing and how we value things within our society should reflect the coach education. And it should reflect the learning outcomes. The learning outcomes for young people should reflect the needs of that society or the needs of that community. And, you know, sometimes you have to generalize because you're talking about a national coaching license, but, you know, these things need to be within a curriculum, and how are they delivered? How do coach educators deliver to student coaches who will eventually deliver to the youth that they work with within their community? Asset-based strategies, working from the strengths of an individual rather than the old school trying to pull apart all the things that they're not doing well, which we all dealt with when we were kids and when we were younger. It's just an approach that's just not going to work nowadays. I think kids, and I'm sure it's the same in the UK, I think the kids over here, they're a little bit more worldly, they're a little sharper, and you know, you have to find a different way to communicate with people rather than the old school command style, do it because I told you to do it. So it's a very interesting time to be involved in coach education. And I'm glad you see that the same way.
I think one of the things that you touched on there, you know, is that there's certainly been a shift in approaches to coach education and coaching. But I think that quote unquote old school style, that format, if you like, gets a very bad rep. Because I certainly think it's still got a place in it, and a role to play in coach development as well as player development. And I think we just have to get to.
There's got to be a balance. There has to be a balance.
100%. Well, 100%. It's got to be a balance, and it's that recognizing that. Again, it goes back to having a way, right? Like me and you can have a conversation about how we might do something, but ultimately, you might give me your autonomy to run with it. But you still require to have some, you know, a strong understanding of technical tactical competencies required for that concept to, I guess, come to life, for you to then be able to tell me whether I am on the right or wrong track, or whether what I'm going to do is going to work or not work. And it's not always working or not working in relation to the outcome. It might just be, actually, we've got a very effective process here, but the outcome piece is just not something that's within our control just yet, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. And you know, it's, you know, the analogy that I use, I mean, if you have to deal with a nurse or a doctor, or if you have to do a deal with an airline pilot, you want to deal with someone who looks like they've been there before and they can handle it. And as much as I've talked earlier about being passionate and having that love for the game, you know, you also have to, you know, act as if you've seen some of these things before, because that gives your players at every level confidence that, you know, you have reliable, valid information to pass on to them. So we can be passionate, we can be ourselves, but we also can't go off the rail if a training session doesn't go well. And I'm talking about every level, but particularly with the young people that we deal with. And that's what I was alluding to earlier, being a big enough person to put your hand up and say, you know what, let's tweak this a little bit. Or you know what, let's knock it on the head. We're going to try this again next week and let's see if it works. And if you're doing something that's so bad that you'll never do it again, you have to look at yourself as a coach and say, why am I doing that kind of work? You know, we really need to put some thought into how we prepare. And that's why I was talking about the calendar. When you plan out your whole season, so say your season's 6 months and you just basically plot it out on a calendar when you're practicing and when you're playing, then you can start getting into, okay, what am I emphasizing in attack? What am I emphasizing in defense? What are the transitions between the two? What are my set pieces? And then you can start to create training sessions based on that. And then you can start to plug the training sessions in. And I do think you're talking about old school. There is a value of replicating training sessions. When I was at Livingston in Scotland for a little bit, you know, Paul Hegarty would run the same session on Monday, the same session on Tuesday. We would have Wednesday off, same session on every Thursday, same session on Friday. And of course, he'd tweak it a little bit, but the pattern was similar. And then the players knew what to expect in regards to output and, you know, mindset and different things like that. So there are tried and true methods to teaching and there's tried and true methods to coaching. And as we try and move everything forward, you're absolutely right. We can still fall back on foundational approaches that are tried and true and they still work today. So you're absolutely right. That's the fun thing about it, just trying to find what works in your environment. And understand that every coach around the world has the same problems that you have. To say, how do I motivate these kids? How do I inspire these kids? How do I get them going? You know, that there's the professional managers all over England right now. They had a lousy result on Saturday. How do I get these guys going again? So everyone's in the same boat.
It's a great point. And I think, you know, I'm smiling because it really resonates. I mean, especially when I'm delivering coach education courses in particular, that the number of coaches who, I guess, go through their journey with an assumption that they're the only ones dealing with this challenge. And it goes back to my earlier point, right, about, you know, having those conversations, being able to interact with coaches and peers. I think one of the biggest challenges that I see is often when coaches come on a course, it's very rare, if I'm being honest, I come on a course and I'm interacting with the majority of people that have an open mindset. A lot of people come on courses, that in my experience anyway, and they come into these courses with a very headstrong view of what they're doing as being the right thing. And and I guess, to be honest, they're the challenging ones that I love working with, because it's almost like you've got to provoke thought, get them to reshape and rethink what they. What they're doing without telling them which direction to go in. It's almost, are you sure about that?
Well,
are you really thinking about what you're doing?
And you know, sometimes you gotta, you know, go beyond the propaganda. So I'm a big Brian Clough guy. I must have 7-8 books on him. I think the guy was a genius. And you look at Clough, and then, you know, Clough was very set in his ways, and Clough, I totally disagree. I think he was a very bright man. He was very clever in how he engaged with people, and I actually think he was quite flexible on a lot of things. And then he had a couple of non-negotiables that were very clear for the people that work with them. And I think any coach can work that way, where you should be relatively flexible in a majority of things that happen with football, because things can change all the time. And you have 2, 3, 5 non-negotiables that your players know, this is where the rubber hits the road. This is where I feel very strongly about. But if you look at stuff on Brian Clough, you think, well, he wasn't flexible. He never changed for anybody. And, you know, and then all of a sudden youth coaches are going in thinking that I'm going to be this way with these young kids. And it's not true. And, you know, like I said, the Kevin Keegans, the Kenny Dalglishes, these guys are so bright and flexible and intelligent about how they see the game. And that would be my advice to any young coach. You have to have a framework to work from, whether it be a game model or, you know, basic philosophy, but be flexible with a lot of other things and showing that flexibility and, you know, being big enough to put your hand up when things aren't going the way you wanted to and taking some ownership. It takes the pressure off the kids, and you're actually going to get better performances and better engagement from them when you do that. So I think that's the same at every level, but I always find that funny when the great coaching examples out there, they're more about what I'm talking about than the opposite. They're much more open-minded, flexible people that want to learn and get better. But like we have mainstream ideas of what a coach is, and they have to be tough, and they have to be, this is how we do it. I don't think that way has ever worked, and it certainly does not work now.
Just on that, then, you know, you talked about having a way to work and whatnot, and you know, you talk there about game models, and I think they've become so common now for everyone to have one. I personally don't prescribe to a specific way of playing. I'm very, very much open in terms of what it looks like, as long as we can say that, you know, as well as we can draw clear links and align it to the principles of the game. But I guess, you know, from your perspective, and you know, I'm conscious of time as well, but from your perspective, what are some of the, you know, if there's a young coach listening to this, or even not even a young coach, just a coach thinking, actually, do you know what, I really need to kind of get something down in writing, or I need to really think about what my approach actually is, what are some key questions that you'd encourage coaches to ask? And I mean, for me, it always goes back to, well, what do I want the end to look like?
Yeah.
Then I work back from there in terms of the types of behaviors and types of practices that might align to that. So I don't know what your thought process is.
I had a friend of mine say, football is a game of opposites. You know, so if you want to play in behind people, play in front of them. If you want to play in front of people, play behind them a couple of times. So this is going to get to my point. So, you know, when you scratch down the surface, you're either an attacking coach or you're a defending coach. I just think that's, you know, if you want to get down to basics, and I'm an attacking coach, I prefer my teams to go forward, commit a lot of people forward into the box, fullbacks are going, that type of thing. And I'm trying to defend in transition with the least amount of players I can get away with. So in saying that, what is my transition defending look like? Because I'm an attack-minded coach and my focus is on attacking and going at teams and, you know, having flexible strikers and be able to go at people with two strikers, three strikers, false nine, one in the hole, one as a target. I like to go at people different ways. I shape my team from the center forward, how we play in the center forward and then back. Some people work from the back four up or the back line up. I work the other way. I work from what's my center forward doing back. So what I've learned over time is, if that's the case, then if that is where I want to focus, then where am I at our weakest, and where at our weakest in defensive transition? We've lost the ball. We've committed numbers. Now, what do we do? And that's where a lot of my training would focus on getting that right. How do we defend in transition? What kind of rotations of players fill into areas when we've lost the ball? How do players recover back into the shape? And that obviously requires a lot of rotation, requires a lot of communication and a lot of talking. So if I had a, you know, that's a very simple way of looking at it that can obviously be very complex, as complex as you want it to be. But that's what I would ask a coach. Okay, are you an attacking coach or are you a defending coach? If you're a defending coach and you like to sit in and you want to hit people on the break, then I would say, okay, after you've gotten the way that you want to defend down, what is your attacking transition look like? You know, how do we get up the pitch? Are we getting up the pitch with an out ball? Are we getting out the pitch building out? Are we playing through people? So ultimately, those are the questions. You're basically with the ball and without the ball. Where's your focus tend to be? And obviously, as a coach, you got to focus on both. It's the type of sport where, you know, if every game was 5-4, okay, great, but it's not. It's usually 2-1. So there's a little bit of that element to it that you have to think about defending even when you don't want to. So I'm an attacking coach, but you still have to think about, how am I going to defend when my team loses the ball? That type of thing. And how, you know, they call it the Gegen press. You know, that's the new thing. We were doing that 20, 30 years ago. We've lost the ball. Let's try and get the ball back as quickly as possible. that is one thing I'm noticing as an older coach. They're talking about stuff now that we were talking about the 86 World Cup. So the way Maradona used to come off and play in between the lines and having, you know, inverted wingers that come inside and fullbacks coming forward. And I mean, a lot of the stuff, and I'm sure it was the same 20, 30 years before that with Hungary and Puskas and, you know, so on and so forth. So you're always going to have these trends in the game and they seem to come back again. So it's a simple game. And we have to remember that, and that would be my advice to any coach. Be a historian, look back and see a different trends, but try and find something that works for you foundationally, and that's what's going to set up your daily work, your weekly work, yeah. And then your week, you know, during this your work during the season.
And I think it's a great point, and you know, just to work that resonates with yourself as a coach, or work that resonates with yourself as a coach, but then it's also relevant in geared around the needs of your players, right? And it's really going back to, you know, full circle, that piece around connection. And just, you've got to understand the player, you know, the players, yes, but you've also got to understand the people that are the players.
Yes.
And I think, you know, it's a great way to look at it, because ultimately they're all within that structure that we kind of identify and formulate. Well, everyone's going to have a different need within it, in terms of some people will get it, some people won't, some people need to be shown it, some people need to be talked through it, some people need to be walked through it. And I think, you know, that is the beauty of coaching. Like, there's no one right way, and I'm, you know, we probably ain't even scratched the surface on the majority of your experiences and your insights, but I'm just, again, I'm curious, you know, just from your perception, then, you know, if you, I find it quite interesting the way that you look at it, you know, the more people that come to you for advice now, the older you realize you are.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right? Yeah. What's been the biggest bit of advice you've received from someone?
Yeah, it's, and it just happened recently, so, you know, it's a great field to be in. You know, there's no lazy people in coaching. I mean, if you're in coaching and you're making a career out of it, you're a worker. But, you know, I used to remember looking at people's records, really bad records. You know, they say university football, you play 18 games and you see some people go 1-16. I remember thinking to myself, how could you ever let your team get that bad? And my last couple seasons at Georgia Southern were exactly that. And we had a bad year with COVID. We couldn't get the kids that we wanted to get in 2020, and we had a bad season, and then we try and fix it. And the higher up you go, the harder it is to fix it right away. And you can't get rid of 15 people and bring in 15 people, and it's not necessarily the players with the issue. But what I didn't do is I didn't adapt. So I have my way that I like to play. As long as I have the players that I was recruiting pre-COVID, I could play that style. We were very good. But COVID impacted our recruitment policy. It changed the type of player that I was getting in, and I didn't change my tactic. I stayed the same. And that's where you're jamming square pegs into round holes. And then the players will get resentful. The players will get resentful because you're putting them in positions where they feel like they're not being allowed to succeed. And so, you know, it's easy for me. I could come up with all these wonderful stories about all the success that I have. But, you know, I'm going to share this with everybody that, I went through a couple of bad seasons there for the first time in my career. I coached for 25 years, always did very well. And those last three seasons were really tough. And, you know, I feel like it's my job as a coach educator now to help coaches to remember, one, it can happen to you. So no matter how good you think you are, how successful, it can go the other way real fast. So you need to be prepared for that. And two, you know, if you do not have the horses for your primary style, you have to change. You have to change. Yeah. The kids don't have to change. You have to change. It'd be the same thing if I was coaching a pro team. But the difference is they're not going to give you 3 years. They're going to give you 6 games and then you're out.
That's if you're lucky.
If you're lucky. So that's what I would say. I really learned that. And being out of coaching full time now and focusing on my dissertation and, you know, doing some stuff with coach education with U.S. soccer, it's just like anything. You step away for a little bit, you're like, wow, you know, I should have done this. I could have done this. And not in a regretful, upset way, but just in an analytical way. So, all right, if I got an opportunity to do this again, which I may never get, you know, I might do this different. And if I'm never going to get the opportunity to do that and coach again, then what I'm going to do as a coach educator is I'm going to try and pass along these insights. And again, Kevin Keegan was talking. I mean, people were asking him questions about when they blew that lead at Newcastle, you know, and this is a man who's accomplished everything. And he's talking about what he would have done and if he made the right decision. And, you know, he bought Aspria, did Aspria mess the team up? You know what I mean? Guys are asking him really pointed questions. And he was so humble and so analytical about what he did. And I really respect that. So I feel like I need to do the same thing at a much lower level. And if we're going to be in this field, especially as we get older, pass on our experience to younger coaches and to coaches that might want to learn, that it can happen to anybody. You need to be flexible and all the things that I'm espousing, which I believed in before all these things happen. When it's going on, that's when it's tough. That's when it goes back to having a mentor, having someone you can trust, somebody that you can call. Because your assistants, no matter how loyal they are, they can only give you so much, and you know they're not going to want to step over that line. You really need somebody who's not connected with you, that has a little bit of experience, and say, hey, by the way, I watched your team, and I think you have a problem with ABC, or by the way, I went by and watched practice, you know, ABC, or by the way, you look like you haven't slept in 3 days, you know, that type of thing. So that's why mentoring, whether it's formal or informal, I think that's a gap. And you going back to talking in the US, I think, you know, there seems to be a great informal mentor network in the UK or Italy or Spain, because there's just so many great people in the game. I think because of geography and because of the lack of football culture, we're still getting there in America. But I'd be interested in seeing how we can get more mentoring for young coaches. Like I said, either formal or informal, where we can help them with some of these issues.
And I think the key there is obviously for the coach also to start by recognizing they do, not in a negative way, but they need help. We all need help, right? We all need to get... we all have blind spots. We all need support and guidance in terms of how to fill those blind spots. So even not even just to fill them, but recognize what those blind spots are before we can build on it, right? And I think there's so many, I guess, elements to that in terms of recognizing that actually not just one mentor is going to solve that problem as well. You're going to have multiple mentors. And I think this is the beauty of, I guess, where coaching has gone. Everyone's got different skill sets. Everyone's got different approaches and different ways to skin the cat, so to speak. So I guess, I think... You know, my advice to coaches, anyone listening to this, is, you know, where are you getting your information from? Who are you qualifying that with? And are you looking at different sources, or are you always going to the same source? Because, you know.
Or are you looking at sources that are so far away from where you are? So I think that's sometimes where the pros, they're the worst example for a young coach. So watching a manager and, you know, all the different things that can happen at that level, you're absolutely right. There needs to be some kind of a connection closer to where that person is working. And it's wonderful to watch Manchester United or Arsenal or whatever, but sometimes those are the worst people to be taking, taking an example from. It needs to be something where we're not looking at youth sport through the lens of professional standards. It's actually that's where I think we have a big conflict in a lot of societies, certainly in the States. And I don't know what it's like in Britain, but, you know, forget about the parents. And we're not going to be developing referees, or referees will not want a referee. Young kids will not want a referee if they feel like they're getting abused every time they step on the field. But the reason why people abuse youth referees, because they see it in the football stadiums. They see that, you know, fans abusing a referee, but that's a professional referee who's a grown man or a grown woman. So, these fall into a lot of the things that I'm focusing on with my studies and, you know, where are we with sport? What's it supposed to be? You know, how many of these young people are going to go on and play professional anything? They're going to be, you know, people that are going to hopefully contribute positively back to their community. Therefore, how are we training our coaches? Are we emphasizing development of life skills and sportsmanship and social inclusion and conflict resolution? I mean, you know, these aren't just, you know, just little phrases. These are important parts of any community and any society. And that's where, as football coaches, we can really do a great service or a great disservice to our towns and cities if we're not working with these kids correctly. I think it's a very important part of a young person's development.
I think it's a brilliant message. And I think, you know, the underlying bit for me there is that we've got to be accountable. We've got to take responsibility for what we're doing, whether that's linked to our own development, but that's, you know, ultimately we're in a position of responsibility for the participants and the players that we work with, or if I'm a coach developer and I'm working with coaches, like, what are we doing to make sure that we're being the best version of ourselves within that? And I think that's probably the key takeaway for me within that. It's just, can you be deliberate and intentional in all your actions? And I talk about it all the time. Like, you can't go into it, you know, go into something without an awareness or a preparation towards it and expect it to be, you know, successful. Because ultimately the prep and the awareness that you go into it with is going to kind of define what success should look like at the back end of it. So I think there's so many different pieces within that. I guess, you know, again, I'm conscious of time, but, you know, if there was coaches listening to this now thinking, right, what's the take home message from John Murphy today? What would that be for you?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we all prepare for our training sessions, and, you know, I don't mean to make light of it. Some people do it 5 minutes as they're walking out of their car onto the pitch. But there is some kind of preparation that takes place. And then obviously there's an execution. I think what we miss out a lot of times is reflection. So my advice to any coach, extend your preparation time, template your work. Like I said, so you know, you've got to, you've at least got the daily pattern mapped out for 6 weeks. And then, you know, you can start to put themes within those boxes. And then as you get closer to each actual training session, that's when you tweak it. And even when you tweak it to prepare to do the session, you're going to show up and you're going to have 14 as opposed to 16, or 20 as opposed to 12. And you have to adapt on the moment. So there's a preparation. There's the execution. The execution has to be done in a way where the people are enjoying themselves. There's passion, the warm-ups, everything. You get everybody going, a laugh, use that energy, get them moving, and then be able to be flexible within that session. Then be flexible in your reflection. Go back. You have to spend 10, 15 minutes. And the great thing is now we can use our phone. Just hit record while you're driving home. Just record 5 minutes of thought. And then you can transcribe that and get that into some kind of a Google Doc. And now you have some kind of a reflection from that training session while it's fresh in your head. And that's going to help you not only build up for the game that weekend, but build up for the next session. And then you can start to see patterns. And you know, that would be my advice to any coach. You know, complete the coaching cycle, which is the prep, execution, reflection, and it should always move in that way. You're trying to connect. You're trying to connect training sessions, ultimately connect the match, and then there should be a thread running through your season. And there's a way of doing it that's not going to require, you know, be a full-time football coach. There's a lot of people that are working part-time and they have full-time jobs, but we have technology now. There's no excuse. There's no excuse for us not to be prepared. There's no excuse for us not to give the kids our best when we're on the pitch with them. And there's no excuse not to reflect afterwards to help set up best practices and contingencies for the next time.
I think you're spot on, and it just links back into that plan, do review piece, right? And I say to people all the time, the review is probably the most important part.
Yes.
Because if you're not reviewing, how are you planning again?
Yes.
Like, that review is going to inform your plan. And obviously, in the first instance, the question is, well, where do we start? I think it's always with a review. So even if I go into work with a group of players for the first time, 9 times out of 10, I'm probably just doing a bunch of different games.
Yeah.
Because I really want to just understand, who have I got in front of me? What can I identify, observe, and notice that they might need or they maybe don't need, so that I can take stock of that, and then now that becomes the basis of my plan going forward, right? And I think it's just that being deliberate and intentional in delivering that reflection piece. And I think you came up with a very simple, great idea, right? And that it might just be a voice recording on your phone immediately. Give yourself some hot reflection, revisit it in a couple of days. And I always say to coaches, just take 2 minutes, just that's share it. Whatever you think of on the session, and then reflect back on it a couple of days later.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a book. Like you said, five minutes of talking, which turns into a paragraph of text, and then you can clean it up a little bit, just create little bullets. And now you got a working Google document. There's no excuse. I mean, all of us should be able to do it. So it's something, and it will actually increase your enjoyment as a coach, because you will see, you know, your objectives actually taking place, and you'll see the kids enjoy practice more and actually see development in their performance. So it's really, you know, it's as much for the coach as it is for anybody else. If you're miserable and you're not really knowing what's next, I mean, like, you have to look at yourself and say, all right, how am I preparing? How am I reflecting? And those two things will impact what your implementation is going to be the day of practice or the game.
100%. I think you're spot on. John, it's been a real pleasure, man. I really appreciate your time today, man.
I'm glad we finally were able to make it happen as well. I love all your stuff. Your posts are great on LinkedIn and great content. And I think this is a great way for all of us to learn. And, you know, for people around the world, the football in America is really growing. It's very exciting. I think sometimes people don't know how much it's growing over here. And I think the World Cup next summer is going to reflect that. And then the people who live here in America that are listening to your show, what I ask people all the time, are you going to see this World Cup as the culmination of all the work that's come up to this point, or as a launching pad for something better? And I see the 2026 World Cup as a launching pad for something better in this country when it comes to football moving forward. So
Planning on being there for the World Cup at some point.
Listen, you got a place to stay in Georgia. So just let me know.
100%. I'll take you up on that if I get out there, man. John, it's been a massive pleasure, man. Thank you very much for your time again, man.
All right, top man.
Take care.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.